Namaskara to all Ajahns, and good afternoon everybody. Today, first of all, I would like to express my thanks for giving me a chance by the Midwest Buddhist Meditation Center, Michigan, to be here to share the precious teaching of the Buddha. So thank you. I choose a very difficult topic today, and very profound and difficult topic. I will try my best to make it clear to all of you, and hopefully the last half an hour we can have question and answer if there's anything unclear in your mind. Okay. So today's topic is how Abhidhamma helps in samatha and insight meditation. So before I go into how it helps, we have to understand a little bit Abhidhamma. Abhi mean higher, Dhamma mean everybody know, teaching, the higher teaching. And this Abhidhamma nowadays is largely ignored by many people. Why is it so? Because it is very difficult, profound, and subtle subject, which is very difficult to penetrate. And you need a very good teacher, if possible, plus the practical meditation experience, only then you can explain Abhidhamma in a clear and lucid way. Therefore, nowadays, this subject is largely ignored. However, this subject is so interesting and is so important, especially to realize the non-self nature of being phenomena. We all know the most difficult part of Dhamma is non-self. It's most difficult part to understand, to be understood. And if you can understand thoroughly Abhidhamma, the non-self knowledge can become so clear in your mind, and it helps you to get rid of the wrong self, wrong view of self. Definitely, absolutely. Okay. So, what is this Abhidhamma? Abhidhamma means higher Dhamma, and Abhidhamma consists only ultimate truth. It deals only with ultimate truth. And in this world, we have two types of truth. One is conventional truth, Samuti Satcha. Another one is ultimate truth, Paramattha Satcha. So what is conventional truth? Conventional truth is the ordinary thing that we use. We communicate, for example, house, a person, table, microphone, computer, and so on. He and she. All these are called conventional truth. And this conventional truth can be penetrated again into more details. For example, a being. So when we say he or she a person, we still can penetrate this person into more detail, minute detail. A person's body consists of what? If you touch your body, how do you feel? You just touch your bone, how do you feel? Hardness, heart. Heart is earth element. And sometimes when you feel hot, the sweat comes. So the sweat is flowing down. This flowing is water element. Sometimes you feel heat inside. There is fire element. And sometimes you feel a lot of air in the body. or you can flex your body, you can flex your hand, stretch your hand, and so on. This is wind element. So the body consists of what? Four elements. So these four elements are ultimate truth. And you cannot divide this four element again into more minute detailed element. So a person's body is just concept. Concept. For a practitioner, you have to penetrate concept and reach ultimate truth if you want your insight to unfold. If you stay just on concept level, then your insight is just ordinary. We cannot even say it's insight knowledge. So when you penetrate into four elements and you find no one. No one possesses earth element, water element, wind element, and so on. So in Abhidhamma, Abhidhamma deals only with ultimate truth. And there are four in Abhidhamma. Number one is called materiality, rupa, in Pali, rupa. Second, it follow the sequence is we start with citta, consciousness. Second, mental factor, cetasika. Then third, rupa, we call matter or materiality. Number fourth, vibhana, unconditioned element, vibhana. So Abhidhamma only deals with this four only in minute detail. And how this knowledge helps insight meditation? As we know, insight meditation is the only path that can liberate ourselves from suffering. So how this knowledge can help the insight meditation? If you have knowledge of Satipatthana Sutta, the discourse on foundation, four foundation of mindfulness, under Kaya Nupassana Satipatthana, under contemplation of body, Kaya Nupassana Satipatthana, there is one subject called Four Elements Meditation. And this, in the four foundation of mindfulness, under this Kaya Nupassana Satipatthana, bodily contemplation, Buddha said, this body, wherever or however it is placed, consists only four elements, water, Pathavi Dhatu, earth element, Apo Dhatu, water element, Pathavi Dhatu, Apo Dhatu, Tejo Dhatu, fire element, and Vayu Dhatu, wind element. Buddha only said like that. In this body consists only four elements. Therefore, you go and practice how to start. So when you read the sutta, this contemplation of body, Buddha said this body consists of four elements. Okay, then finish. That's all. How to start? We don't even know what is earth element, right? If Buddha said body consists of four elements, we don't even know what is water element. We don't even know what is wind element. We don't even know what is fire element. How to start? Therefore, in Abhidhamma, explain very clearly each element, together with each element's characteristic, function, a manifestation, and proximate cause, the causes for each element to arise in the body. So, with the knowledge of Abhidhamma, in this materiality rupa section, you know how to practice body contemplation, Kaya Nupassana Satipatthana. I remember once, I think 14 years ago, when I first came to America in Spirit Rock, California. So at that time, I was invited to give a talk. And before the talk started, there are many teachers there. There are many teachers in Spirit Rock. Then one of the teachers told me that, "Hey sister, now we are discussing four foundations of mindfulness, Sutta study, four foundations of mindfulness, and we reach four elements meditation, but we don't know how to how to start, how to practice." Because Buddha said it very, brief. Say it briefly in the discourse. So the teacher asked me how to start with four element meditation. Unfortunately, I am Abhidhamma teacher, so I can share my knowledge with them. So this is only one part of the four foundations of mindfulness. Okay, so if you have Abhidhamma knowledge, you know how to practice correctly. Because some of the sutta are given to a disciple who have sharp wisdom. So if the listeners have sharp wisdom, Buddha didn't have to explain long, not necessary, right? Buddha explained a little bit that intelligent listeners can understand well, can penetrate well, therefore Buddha stopped short, don't explain further. So because of that, some people, even though they think sutta is very easy, but when they come to certain sutta, they still don't understand well. Because each sutta is meant for different type of listeners. Okay. So the first ultimate truth, materiality, explained very clearly in the Abhidhamma. So, and depend on these four elements, there are 24 derived materiality, including our eye, ear, nose, tongue, body, and so on. So if you can understand this four elements plus 24 derived materiality, then you understand what rupa means. And not only that, Buddha also explained why the four elements arise. Because nothing arises without causes. This is very important teaching of the Buddha. Everything arises owing due to causes. Without understanding cause and effect, the non-self nature cannot unfold. So when you understand, four elements also arise due to causes. So what are the causes? Do you know? Can you say something? What are the causes for the earth four elements in the body to arise? Why you have this body?
Action,
yes, karma. So we say karma. So we call karma born materiality. But this is only one of the causes. There are another three causes. For example, when you eat chili, a lot of chili, how do you feel? Hot. Then fire element become excessive. So the fire element in the body become excessive. You feel very hot. So the food also influence the element in the body. We call aharaja rupa. The materiality produced by, bond by food. And now summer season, spring season, weather become good. But if it's the winter, our body also change another form. The skin crack and so on. So the body, the four elements in the body also change according to the change of season. This is called temperature born. Utuja rupa. Temperature born element. And also the last factor, which is very important, when you get angry. When you get angry, what happened to your body?
Stress.
Your face turned to red. Your heart pump very fast. Even your body shake. So the wind element becomes strong. When you get very angry, this anger mind produce heat element, produce tejo dhatu produce fire element in the body, so the body become very hot. And because of the fire element, then the wind element also speed up, so the body start to shake, heartbeat very fast. These are called materiality produced by mind, by your mental state. So mental state, healthy mental state give good health. Unwholesome mental state affect your health very much. This also mentioned in the in Chinese medical school. Is that most of the disease come from the corrupted mind. So if you want to cure your body, cure your mind first. Mind is a forerunner of all states. So this mentioned in the Abhidhamma clearly. So when you understand what are the four elements, what are the causes for the arising of the four elements, then you see there's no self. There's no any person, any beings, any controlling entity that control the change of the four elements in the body. So this is only first part. Okay, now we go to the second ultimate truth, mental factors. Mental factors. In Abhidhamma, there are 52 mental factors. Some are wholesome, some are unwholesome. Buddha said, even if a person know what is wholesome, what is unwholesome, is very important. The arising of the Buddha also to let you know what is wholesome, what is unwholesome. Because without this teaching, sometimes we don't even know. For example, when you enjoy the food, without the teaching of the Buddha, we don't even know this is unwholesome. We think it's necessary to enjoy the food. So while we are enjoying the food, we don't even know, there's unwholesome mental factor called greed or craving or desire. But after we learn the teaching of the Buddha, especially these mental factors, each mental factors are explained very clearly in the Abhidhamma. Then we start to understand, this is unwholesome. So when we know it is unwholesome, then we can avoid. If we do not know, then we take delight in it, and we create more unwholesome karma that prolong our cycle of rebirth. Therefore, in the Abhidhamma, Buddha classify very clearly what are the wholesome mental states, what are the unwholesome mental factors. And not only that, and how this help the insight. First, we know what is unwholesome, what's wholesome. Okay, we get the clear understanding. And we proceed. How this understanding, the mental factors, helps the insight meditation, vipassana. In the Mahasatipatthana Sutta, Buddha, under this citta nupassana, satipatthana, the contemplation of mind, Buddha said, when mind affected by greed, you know mind affected by greed. When mind affected by hatred, you know mind is affected by hatred. When there is distracting mind, you know there is distracting mind. When there is contracted mind, you know. So Buddha gives several mental states in the four foundation of mindfulness to tell you how to be aware of it. And if you understand mental factors, for example, I give greed. Greed, loba, is unwholesome mental factor. And in Abhidhamma, Buddha also explained each mental factor with its characteristic, function, manifestation, and proximate cause. For example, greed. What is the characteristic of greed? Anybody want to try? What do you think? What is the characteristic of greed? Grasping. Huh? We all have this greed. So when the mind starts to grasp at something, you must know greed has arisen in you. So by understanding the characteristic of greed, then you know the greed better. When you know it, you can overcome it. If we don't even know the greed has arisen in us, then we are carried away by the greed. When you are carried away by the greed, we perform unwholesome akusala karma. We perform unwholesome karma. Therefore, Buddha mentioned, okay, the characteristic of greed is grasping. Grasping. And when greed arises in your mind, it has its function. Its function is sticking. Like a meat stick to the hot pan. So this is a function. So when your mind casts at something and stick on something, you know, this is greed. It helps you to recognize the mental factor of greed. And what is the manifestation of greed? When you like something, when you attach to something, usually we don't want to give up. We don't want to give up. So this not giving up is the manifestation of greed. And what is the cause? What is the proximate cause for greed to arise? Seeing enjoyment in the things that leads to bondage. Because you see the enjoyment in the thing, in that things you are experiencing now. In fact, that things lead to bondage. But because of when there is greed, there is ignorant. And ignorant covered the truth. So you do not know that things lead to bondage. So you enjoy in it. You enjoy seeing. So the proximate cause of greed is seeing enjoyment in things that leads to bondage, that leads to suffering, that leads to fetter, and so on. So if you can understand the characteristic, function, manifestation, and proximate cause of just one mental factor, greed, you understand it well. So whenever you experience this greed in you, then you can immediately know it. This is what Buddha taught in Citta Nupassana Satipatthana, contemplation of mind. When a mind affected by greed, one knows the mind affected by greed. In an opposite way, if one does not know, then what happened to you? Suppose the greed has arisen in you, but you do not know. Then what happened to you? I think all of you experience, all of us experience greed. So if we do not know, then what follow after the greed? We lust even more, right? We grasp even more. So if we lust after, we lust even more, then the greed increases more and more. And precisely, this greed is the origin of all suffering. This greed is the second noble truth, the truth of suffering, the origin, the truth of the origin of suffering. Therefore, just know one mental factor, you can free yourself from many suffering. This is how Abhidhamma helps you, the understanding, the theoretical understanding of each mental factor. And when this mental factor or mental state that arises in your mind, you can easily recognize it. When you can recognize it, then the awareness is there. Sati, mindfulness is there. When mindfulness is there, you know it. Then later on, you can apply wisdom. How to apply wisdom? So when greed has arisen in you, you know. Okay, greed, a mind affected by greed. As a mind affected by greed, not by mind. It's just a mental state arises due to causes. Due to causes, especially due to impingement, the contact, tassa, of the six sense faces to six sense object. For example, form, contact to the eye, right? Sound impinges the ear. Smell impinges the nose. The taste impinges the tongue. The tangible impinges the body. And the mental object impinges the mind. So when there's impingement, we call contact, tassa, there is some feeling, whether pleasant or unpleasant. And because of, if it is pleasant, then craving, greed arises in you. So at that moment, if you can recognize it, then you can stop short. The greed will not increase. So when you know all this mental factor, let me give another example of another mental factor. Wrong view. Let's say wrong view. Many of us have wrong view. Wrong view of self. Wrong view of eternality. We think a person migrate from one destination to another destination. Okay. What is the characteristic of wrong view? Wrong view in the teaching of Abhidhamma is just a mental factor. It's not a self. So what is the characteristic of wrong view? It's in justification, in justifying interpretation of things. It's a characteristic of it. And what is the function? Function of wrong view. When wrong view arises, the function is pre-assumed. Based on your own ignorance, based on our ignorance, we pre-assume. This is the function. And the manifestation, it manifested, wrong view manifested as belief. Wrong belief. And what is the cause? What is the cause for wrong view to arise? Because of unwillingness to see the Noble One. Because of not associating with Noble One. And based on our ignorance and not hearing the correct doctrine, not hearing the correct Dharma, so we hold on to our pre-assumption. This is wrong view. So by understanding mental characteristic, function, manifestation, and proximate cause, then when it arises, we know it, we can acknowledge it, we can recognize it. And when we recognize it, then we can give it up, let it go. Don't let it stay in the heart. So all these mental factors are clearly explained in the Abhidhamma 52. If you can know each one clearly, then in your life, whenever they arises, then you can aware of it. Then later on, you apply wisdom to see its impermanence. Mentally, you can contemplate. When it arises in your mind, contemplate it as impermanent, impermanent, impermanent. Or you contemplate it as just a mental factor, just a mental factor, not a self, not a self. This way of contemplation is very, very important. Suppose, let's say, greed has arisen in your mind, and you know greed has arisen in my mind. But if you do not contemplate this greed as non-self, then what happened to you? Or if you do not contemplate this greed is impermanent, then what happened to you? What happened to your consciousness? What happened to your mind? Please. No answer. Richard.
Oh. Unwholesome action.
Okay. So when greed has arisen in us, even though we know greed has arisen, we have the mindfulness to know, to aware of it. But if we don't apply wisdom to contemplate it is impermanent, then our perception to it is permanent. We will think it is permanent, permanent, permanent. Because this perception of permanent is embedded in our heart long, long time ago. Since the round of rebirth, this perception, we call distorted perception, has been embedded in our heart. So long you do not contemplate whatever mental state that has arisen in your mind as impermanent, that perception or that distorted perception will just arise and tell you it is permanent, it is permanent, it is permanent. When you think the greed is permanent, or the anger is permanent, or the ignorance is permanent, or envy is permanent, then you suffer from it. Therefore, in order to undo this distorted perception of permanent, we have to contemplate impermanent, impermanent, impermanent. This Buddha mentioned many, many times in the Sutta, especially in Samyutta Nikaya. So, we contemplate impermanent, impermanent, impermanent. You may ask, how to contemplate? Just mentally say it, note it, impermanent, impermanent, impermanent. Just mentally say it. Then another further question may ask. Just mentally say it. Can we really see the impermanency? Can it really pass away or not? Now this question may pop up in your mind. Now, first, when you contemplate impermanent, we change or undo our distorted perception first. Whether you can see it passes away or not, wait for a moment. We don't look at this anchor first. But the moment you contemplate impermanent, directly you change your distorted perception already. If not, our distorted perception will always embedded in our heart. We never know it's impermanent. Or we may know later on, not at the moment when it arises. So, important is to change our distorted perception first, so that later on our mind can, our way of contemplation, which is free from distorted perception, can harmonize with the truth. Harmonize with the truth, or synchronize with the truth. The truth of what? The truth of impermanency. Buddha said, Sabbe sankhara anicca. All formations are impermanent. But our way of noting things, our way of comprehending things are permanent, permanent, permanent. But in reality, it's impermanent, impermanent, impermanent. So we never come into harmony. There's no synchronization. There's no harmony. So our way of seeing things and the truth is completely opposite. If it is opposite, how can you realize the insight of impermanent nature? Because it's two different ways, opposite direction. Therefore, only for this purpose, even for this purpose, is great enough for you to contemplate impermanent. So whatever mental state arises in your heart, contemplate it, impermanent, 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 for the first purpose to undo the distorted perception of permanent. And so that later on, your way of viewing things can harmonize, can synchronize with the truth of anicca, dukkha, anatta, the truth of impermanent suffering and non-self. And also, when you contemplate impermanent, impermanent, you sever the craving. For example, you have pleasant feeling when your eye sees a pleasant form. A very strong pleasant feeling arises in you. If you can contemplate that that pleasant feeling as impermanent, 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 then that craving will not lead to, that pleasant feeling will not lead to craving. Will not lead to craving. But if you don't contemplate impermanent, when pleasant feeling arises in you, you do nothing. You just enjoy the pleasant feeling. Then pleasant feeling leads to craving. Craving is the origin of all suffering. But if pleasant feeling arises in you, you contemplate it impermanent, 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 then this impermanent, just the word of impermanent will help you to stop short. Will help you to stop short at that pleasant feeling. Don't go to craving. It will not lead to craving. Therefore, contemplate impermanent is very important or essential in the practice of insight knowledge, vipassana. So, mental factors. In Abhidhamma, Buddha talked about 52 mental factors, each one with its characteristic, function, manifestation, and proximate cause. So when you understand this, then you go to Mahasatipatthana Sutta, Citta Nupassana, contemplation of mind, then you understand clearly. It connects very, very well. Okay, now we come to the third ultimate truth. In Abhidhamma, there are four ultimate truths. The third one is called consciousness. Consciousness is the first ultimate truth. It's very, very important. When you understand how consciousness works, how the mind works, the non-self nature becomes so clear in you. And you have no doubt about the past, You have no doubt about the future. You have no doubt about the rebirth. Because many Americans do not believe in rebirth. But sometimes it's not a question you believe it or not, but it is just a fact. It's just a fact. Okay. So to understand the non-self in Vipassana, in order to understand non-self, this knowing the how consciousness work is extremely helpful. Especially the viti citta. Viti means thought process. How the thought process arises and passes away. How the thought process arising, passing away one after another. This viti, we call thought process. When any sense object, impinges sense door, eye, ear, nose, tongue, body, and so on, so the thought process will arise. And this thought process arises one after another in unbroken continuity. Never break. Unbroken continuity. One lead to another. And if you can understand this thought process, and this thought process arises depend on many, many causes, cause and conditions. For example, for eye door cognitive process to arise, in order for me to see you, then there are several conditions that must be fulfilled. For example, number one, I must pay attention. If I don't pay attention to you, I do not see you. The second, light is needed. If it's in the darkness, I cannot see you, right? And third, my eye sensitivity must be good. If I'm a blind person, I can't see you too. So all these factors must be fulfilled in order for eye door cognitive process to arise. So when you analyze each one, then you know everything operates in cause and condition relation. And this thought arises after another, one after another, one after another, up to the last moment in our life. The last moment in our life, the last thought is called death consciousness. Death consciousness. And immediately death consciousness, rebirth consciousness will arise in an unbroken continuity. And some people may say that, okay, if rebirth arises, in Abhidhamma, if you study Abhidhamma, we do not say a person is born, because a person is only concept. So what we say? We say consciousness, rebirth consciousness arises. And we do not recognize or we do not identify this rebirth consciousness is a person, is a being. We just say rebirth consciousness arises. It arises depend on what? Depend on many factors. I give you an example. Suppose a dying person. A dying person, if you work in a hospital, hospices, you can see a dying person before he dies, he sees the vision. Most people, he sees the vision. So sometimes he may, shout, or he may say something which you do not understand, which the nurse, anyone who attended her or him may not understand what he is talking about. Why? Because this person sees the vision. This vision we call nimitta. Nimitta. And this nimitta will show that where he is going to reborn, where rebirth will take place. And why this nimitta arises for dying person, except arahant, okay? For any dying person, he will see one type of nimitta. And this nimitta can be like hell fire, or you can see like Buddha Rupa, or you can see, if you are the person who always offer flowers to the Buddha, maybe you can see flower, you will see flower. If you are a monk, always give Dhamma talk, you may see yourself giving the Dhamma talk again. So all these are nimitta. This nimitta arise to show that where, to indicate where you are going to reborn. So for example, a person is going to reborn as monkey in the next existence, he may see the forest. He may see the forest. But some may argue, seeing forest doesn't mean to reborn as monkey. He can be a forest monk rather than monkey. So it depends on that time, also his mood. If he see the forest, he has happy mood, maybe he will be reborn as a monk in the future, as a human being in the future. But sometimes if he has to be reborn as a monkey, also he sees the forest. Then the question comes, why all this nimitta during dying moment, why the nimitta arises? For everyone, because of karma, right? Because of karma done previously, either in this lifetime or in previous lifetime. It doesn't mean that this lifetime, the karma, I done the good karma, this karma will ripen in this lifetime. It doesn't mean that. Not necessary. It can be this one of the particular karma you done 3 lifetimes ago. That karma suddenly ripen, then produce this nimitta in a person's dying moment. And this person, when he sees the nimitta, the craving, because as an ordinary person, we have the kilesa, defilements. We call anusaya kilesa, latent defilement, which has not been uprooted yet by arahant path consciousness. So this latent defilement will arise, grabs that nimitta. Grabs it. And this latent defilement of craving, craving for what? Craving for life, another life. Because this person, although his body dies, going to die, but his desire to live again, to continue to live again, is very strong. This is called bawa tanha. Bawa tanha, craving for existence. Only arahant has no craving for existence. So every beings, so before dying, this latent defilements, anusaya kilesa of craving tanha, will pop up and grasp that nimitta, supported by ignorance. Supported by ignorance. What is ignorance? Not knowing existence is suffering. It's called ignorance. Not knowing any existence is suffering is called ignorance. Because of not knowing existence, because of not knowing life is suffering, therefore craving for existence will arise, grabs that nimitta, then this person pass away. But before pass away, this nimitta can hang on for many days. Now you hang on for many days, and this person will say something which the attendant cannot understand. You are a doctor, maybe you have heard about this. Many people, nurse who attended a dying person, sometimes they know, hey, this person is talking something which she cannot understand, because this dying person sees the nimitta, sees the this nimitta. So when the craving arises, grabs that nimitta, then the karmic force push the consciousness, push the consciousness to new existence. Therefore, the rebirth consciousness arises in new destination, whether in human world or in animal world or in hell world or in heavenly world, depend on what types of karma ripened at the dying moment. Is it clear? It's very complicated, huh? It's a bit difficult because Abhidhamma is called higher teaching. So when rebirth consciousness arises in a new place, new existence, can you say this rebirth consciousness is the same person, let's say in the human world? The rebirth consciousness arises in the human world. Can you say this rebirth consciousness is the same person from the past?
No.
No. Okay, no. Good. Can you say it's not connected at all with the past? No. So is it connected? Yes or no?
Yes.
Yes. So is it the same?
No.
No. Very good. You all have right view. This is the correct view. This is the right view. So the rebirth consciousness, a new being, if you say it conventionally we call new being. But if we say it ultimately, we only say consciousness. So this new consciousness is neither the same nor otherness. This is correct view. So if you have this view, then you will not entertain the wrong view of eternalism. Right? If you say it's the same, it's the view of eternalism. If you say it's not connected at all, it's called annihilation. Not connected at all with past. No. New being. Totally new. Not connected with the past. This is called annihilation view. So avoid these two views. Avoid these two extremes, Buddha say, dependent on ignorance. Dependent on ignorance, formation, sankhara. Dependent on ignorance, formation arises. Dependent on formation, consciousness arises. So Buddha say, according to dependent origination, paticca samuppada, avicca paccaya sankhara, sankhara paccaya viññana, viññana paccaya namma rupa, and so on. So this is the correct view. So when you have the knowledge of Abhidhamma and you have the knowledge of this thought process, cognitive process. So if you have the knowledge of this cognitive process, then not only it helps your insight meditation, it also helps you to shape the right view. And right view is most important for a person in order to become a noble one stream enterer. Without right view, no one can achieve the noble path consciousness of stream entry. So from this point you can see how helpful Abhidhamma is in order to help us in order to deepen our inside knowledge of right view and also the knowledge of non-self. As knowledge of non-self is very difficult for many people. And it also helps us to understand how the cycle of rebirth comes, how it starts and how it comes to end. So all these are important knowledge in Abhidhamma, which helps the insight meditation. Okay. Okay. Now I'd like to talk a little bit about how Abhidhamma helps Samatha concentration. We know there are two types of concentration in Buddha's teaching. One is called Samatha. There are two types of meditation in the teaching of the Buddha. One is called Samatha concentration. Another one is Vipassana, insight knowledge. These two are very important, but Vipassana is peculiar to the teaching of the Buddha. If Buddha did not arise in the world, Samatha meditation, still you can still find Samatha meditation. But you cannot find insight meditation if Buddha did not arise in this world. However, Samatha meditation is very important for insight knowledge. Because Buddha said, one who has concentration sees things as they really are. What are the things as they really are? Impermanent, suffering, and non-self. So without concentration, you want to see the body is impermanent, suffering, and non-self. You want to see all the mental states are impermanent, suffering, and non-self. It's very difficult. Even you want to realize the body consists of four elements, it's also very difficult without concentration. Therefore, concentration is also very important in the teaching of the Buddha. However, concentration practice is also largely ignored nowadays. Why is this so? I think most people in America, they know about mindfulness. But concentration, less people know about concentration. Why is it so?
Too busy.
Yes, because concentration practice takes a long time. Mindfulness is more easy. So American lifestyle is very busy. So in order to devote your time to concentration practice, most people find it difficult. Therefore, mindfulness is popular in America, not concentration. Just to suit your lifestyle. Okay, so concentration in Abhidhamma, the last chapter. I'm talking about Abhidhamma Tathāgata. There are seven books of Abhidhamma, but Abhidhamma Tathāgata is a summary of this seven book. It's a book. If you want to really understand Abhidhamma, you have to understand this Abhidhamma Tathāgata first before you can explore the seven books. So in this Abhidhamma Tathāgata, the last chapter deals about Samatha and Vipassana. And it's a summary, the last chapter, chapter 9, is a summary of Visuddhimagga. Visuddhimagga, the path of purification, summarized in the last chapter of Abhidhamma Tathāgata. So many people say that Visuddhimagga is an excellent book. It explains in detail all the Samatha and Vipassana. However, if you want to really understand Visuddhimagga, the path to purification, you must have Abhidhamma knowledge. Without Abhidhamma knowledge, you cannot understand completely the path to purification, Visuddhimagga. Because it's very precise, and very concise. Without Abhidhamma knowledge, you cannot understand. Okay, so this last chapter talks about Samatha. Abhidhamma also mentioned there are 40 meditation subjects, Samatha, concentration practice. There are 40. How many types of concentration practice you know so far? How many types?
One.
One. What's that?
Breathing.
Yeah. Anapanasati. So only one, the rest, other?
only practice one way.
Okay. So many people know Anapanasati, but then why Buddha taught 40?
Yeah.
More enough. why Buddha must teach 40? Because Buddha consider different people have different temperament. And Buddha mentioned there are 6 temperaments. Number 1 is called greed temperament. Some people, their mind inclined to greed. They like everything they like. This also they like, that also they like. So they like everything. So this type of person is called greed temperament. And for greed temperament, you have to choose suitable meditation subject in order to make good progress. And the second temperament is called anger temperament. This type of person easily get annoyed by other people. Small thing, he get angry here and there. So you check yourself which temperament you are. So this type of person is called anger temperament. And for angry temperament, three meditation subjects are very important for him. Loving kindness meditation directly cure this anger. Then compassion meditation, sympathetic meditation. These three are very useful for anger temperament person. So when you know what temperament you are, then you choose a suitable meditation subject so that you can progress smoothly. So the third temperament is deluded temperament. One is a lot of delusion, ignorant. And the fourth temperament is faithful. For Asian people, we have a lot of faith. So maybe we are faithful temperament. So for faithful temperament, maybe recollecting of the Buddha is very useful. Easily he can gain a lot of joy and happiness. So then he progresses very fast. Joy and happiness are very essential in concentration practice. Without joy and happiness, one cannot move forward in concentration practice. So number fifth temperament is faithful, intellectual temperament. Some people born with high intellect. So this person maybe four elements meditation very suitable for him. Four elements meditation is for intellectual person. Then the last one is called discursive temperament. His mind always wander here and there. This type of person suitable to practice Anapanasati, mindfulness of breathing, because when you mind keep your attention on the breath, no restless at all. Therefore Anapanasati is very common because most people are discursive temperament nowadays. Okay, so you know what temperament you are, then you know the 40 meditation subjects which are discussed in Abhidhamma, then you choose the one suitable for you. And in Abhidhamma also talk about jhana. After concentration, then he talked about nimitta. Nimitta. We have three types of nimitta. Preliminary, nimitta. Nimitta means sign of concentration. For example, when we practice Anapanasati, when your concentration goes to very deep state, then a nimitta will appear, light. The light will appear. The light will appear first, we call preliminary nimitta, then develop up to ukaha nimitta, learning sign, and develop again up to last stage, we call patibhaga nimitta. Counterpart sign. So all this are mentioned in Abhidhamma. Because many people, they do not understand when you come to practice concentration, you will see the light. Many people don't have this knowledge. So when you don't have this knowledge, and when you come to concentration practice and you see the light, you may think you have gone crazy. Many people think they have gone crazy because they see the light. But in fact, it's a sign of progress, right? But because you don't have this knowledge, then out of fear, then you stop short. Then it's a loss for you. It's a loss, a great loss for you. Because it's very difficult to get this light. Therefore, Abhidhamma knowledge helps a lot in concentration. At least Abhidhamma knowledge tell you, when you move forward, what will you see, what will you experience, what will you encounter. Then when you have this knowledge, and when you walk this path, you have confidence. You know, I'm in the right track, or I'm in the wrong track. This is very, very important. Because I have students, when they see the light, one of my students in many years ago, American student, when she first saw the light, and her body is filled with rapture and happiness, and because of the pity, joy, the body becomes so light, like weightless, no weight at all. So when she walks, she feels that she's walking in the sky, you know, and so much happiness and joy. Then she cannot feel. Because of pity, she don't have the appetite to eat anything. That at that time, food become very gross to her. She doesn't want to eat at all. And this extraordinary experience, which she feel is very good. However, she didn't have the knowledge to understand this is good experience. And she kept on asking people, I see the light, my body becomes so light, there's no weight at all, I like floating in the sky and so on. And when she asked those who have no experience, all of them told her, you are crazy. Your mind has gone out already, you are crazy. When one person tells you you are crazy, then you may ignore it, right? Second person tell you are crazy, ignore it. If 10 person tell you are crazy, you will not ignore it anymore. You will take it seriously. I am crazy, am I crazy? Finally, he said that yes, I'm crazy. He feel that she is crazy. Then she was admitted to psychiatric hospital for a long time. After she came out from psychiatric hospital, she said that what I experienced, that joy, happiness, rapture in my meditation and non-self in my meditation is different from the life, different from the culture of America. Very different. Especially the non-self. How can I live the world if I have no self? Right? How can I live the world if I have no self? Therefore, in order to find back this self, then she takes drugs. She commit in all the unwholesome deeds, sexual misconduct, drugs, intoxicants, and so on. So when she wrote to me, I had abundance of compassion for her. So the mistake, the fault come from she doesn't have the correct teacher. She doesn't have the knowledge to know she was in the right track. Therefore, I just want to conclude, Abhidhamma knowledge helps. Samatha meditation also helps insight knowledge. So this Abhidhamma knowledge is very, very important. I myself, because I'm Abhidhamma teacher as well as meditation teacher, I feel that my knowledge of non-self is a bit stronger than others because of Abhidhamma knowledge. When you finish Abhidhamma, the cells just collapse, just become very thin. Therefore, I highly recommend that you to study Abhidhamma in order to help your concentration and insight if you have no teacher. But if you have teacher, the teacher will guide you, no problem. Okay, thank you. So we only have 5 minutes left. Any question? Yes.
When people die, say like your parents die,
mm-hmm.
and then years after year, mm. we go to the temple
mm.
and do sangatan or
mm.
you know for the
do dana for
yeah.
mm-hmm. yes.
I wonder if at the end of the life
mm-hmm.
and then the
at the end of whose life?
Yeah. Or the people who died.
Okay.
And you have the continuously you mm. have a rebirth,
mm-mm.
take over.
Mm-mm.
So there was no mm. gap.
Yes, yes.
Between death and birth.
Yes, yes.
So it's my mom died 20 years ago. Mm. Is she still there or she already grown up now, become a teenager already or something? So we try to go to the temple,
uh-huh.
try to
uh-huh.
give her, to make
dana, yes,
make her to be happy.
Yes, 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 yes.
Will she get it or not? Because she
okay. Okay, okay. I will answer you. Okay. Okay. So when your mom die, at the moment when the moment she die, she take rebirth already.
Mm-hmm.
But where she take rebirth, we do not know, right? We don't have the psychic power. We don't have the divine eyes to know where she take her rebirth. Where she reborn, we do not know.
And when?
No. The moment your mom died, immediately she was reborn.
Yeah.
Yes. But where? Because in Buddha's teaching, we sometimes people can reborn in heaven, can reborn in hell, can become animal, can become human being again, but we do not know, right?
Right.
So we do not know. So because we do not know, we better do dana for her. Better do for
her. Whether she get it or not.
Whether she get it or not, we do not know. But for the sake of security, to support her, we better do. In Theravada country or Asian country, we do it. Nah? Whether she get it or not, we do to support her. In case she was reborn in heaven, she didn't need that dana. That dana become inferior to her. But the person, the donor, reap the benefit. You, because you come and do dana, you support the monks, you yourself reap the benefit. And also, when you transfer merit to the departed relative, even though your mother already, let's say, already reborn in heaven, but we have in the round of rebirth, we have so many relatives, departed relatives, not the present mother, maybe long time, in the other lifetime's mother, they maybe become hungry ghosts now. So when you transfer merit to your departed relative, your mom may not receive, but your past departed relative may receive it. They also will be free from the certain degree of suffering. So they also will be grateful to you. Okay? So they are benefited, and you also benefited, because you are the donor. Okay?
A person can be born as an animal also?
Of course. According to Buddha's teachings, yes. In the Pa'au, in my monastery in Burma, many people, because they practice up to the second insight knowledge, many people can see their past life. Many people, I interview many of them. Many people reborn as animal. Many people reborn as animal. Some in hell beings, of course, some in heavenly beings. Depend on your karma. Okay, 5 minutes more. Any other questions?
Can you influence your rebirth if you know you're dying? Can you influence your rebirth by how you're thinking?
Yeah. If your mind is strong, you can. But if your mind is not strong, you need other people to help you. For example, in Sri Lanka, they used to invite people to come before the dying person passed away. They used to invite people to come and chanting. To ask the dying person to take 5 precepts, Then to chant, to let him have some joy and happiness. Or you do some dana on behalf of this dying person before he dies. So let him rejoice. In Sri Lanka, I have read one story, a king who was very devoted to dana, generosity. So every time when he performed a generosity, he will ask his minister to write down, in what day I built a vihara, in what day I offer food to monk, in what day I offer rooks to monk, in what day I what. So he write down every good deed, he write down. So before he passed away, he asked his minister, please read for me. Please read for me each of my good deeds. Then, so when he hear, oh, I'm very happy, then died, go to heaven. This is the way. It is a real story in Sri Lanka. So whatever good deeds you have performed, write it down. Today I came to Midwest, do this meditation center, to listen to talk. Okay, one, tick.
Okay. How about the bad deed?
Bad deed, try to forget it as soon as possible.
You have to delete it.
Yeah, delete it. Because Buddha say, bad deed, try to
eliminate.
Yeah. Don't linger in the mind. If not, during dying moment, then it will pop up. So you have to delete it from your heart. But a good one, remember forever.
In Thailand, we have the monk chanting at the dying people.
Yes.
It's really hard to do here because we don't have enough. Every day, like in my hospital, we have monk coming and chanting for them.
You can invite us when we...
So anybody dying, so just invite monk to help the dying person to go to good rebirth. Or you can help this person to do some dana to let him happy first.
And or you can tell that dying people, realize or put to tamo some and then help our life.
Right.
I try to teach my mom who died from cancer because the mom is a very religious, go to the temple all the time. But they don't practice as much or maybe they don't go to the wrong retreat. So I said, Mom, say tutto tamo sampo and hold her hand and kind of thing like that can help.
Yes. So sometimes if monks are not available, then you as a son and daughter should help.
The idea of what you just said is that you can influence where you're going.
Yes.
The question is, why does it matter?
Oh, it matters very much. If you reborn in an unhappy destination, it's just suffering, suffering. You have no chance to do good deed, and you stay in the suffering state for a long, long time because there's no good deed to support you to come out from that unhappy destination.
So you mean to say then that there are souls that are in the cycle forever? They have no redeeming choices left to them.
When they reborn in unhappy destiny.
Unhappiness state leads to more unhappiness. So just like you can go all the way up.
No. If you in unhappy destination, you still have chance to come out from that unhappy destination, but it depends on the ripening of karma. When that unhappy person in the unhappy destination, during his dying moment, depend on what type of karma ripen at his dying moment. But since he is in unhappy destination, because he has no chance to do good deed, so most probably unwholesome karma will ripen instead of good karma. But if you reborn in happy destination like now, then you have a chance to listen to talk, you have a chance to meditate, you have a chance to meet with monks, and then you accumulate a lot of good karma that support you for another happy destination.
what happens when people commit suicide?
Huh? When people what?
Commit suicide.
Mostly is unhappy destination. Mostly. Yeah. Because the mind is full of depression, mm-hmm. anger, only then they commit suicide. So mostly they go to unhappy destination. But because they don't know, if they understand the karma, I don't think they will commit suicide.
It's not a good thing.
Yes, not a good thing.
Only when the teenager
yes,
commits suicide.
Yes,
because they think dying.
Yes, it's like finished. Yes, they think dying is finished. Everything, all suffering gone. They don't know the new suffering is waiting for it.
They understand.
Yeah.
Angry with the parent.
Right.
The suicide.
Right.
They don't know that when you go on, you never come back. People don't.
Yes, yes, that's why listening to Dhamma talk, Dhamma is very important.
Yeah.
Very, very important. You see the hope, this hope
yeah.
for to liberate from suffering. Okay, I was told I have to stop at 6 o'clock, 6:30 sharp. So I think we this is the end of our talk. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Okay.